Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Loopcast. I'm Chelsea Damon, and today we are actually doing some spreading of podcasting love. We have two people on the show that have been involved in Mosul and the Islamic State podcast. And if you haven't listened to it, it is really informative. It's done in a way that tells a story that goes throughout the different episodes. And there are some hard things to deal with. So be aware of that. However, the show has done really, really well. And we wanted to kind of do a joint podcast on this. So today I'm so happy to have Omar Muhammad on the show and Dr. Hororo Ingram. And they are both involved in this podcast that is with the Program on Extremism at George Washington University. So first of all, thank you for coming on the show, and we're dealing with multiple time zones here. So thank you for being on in the afternoon, evening, morning, et cetera.
Hey, thanks, Josie. We really appreciate it.
So for
to say about this idea of like, this kind of exchange between two podcasts is really a nice beginning. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I thought this was a fantastic idea. And so I'm so happy we were able to make it happen. And especially since everyone is scattered across the world in our strange new times. But for our listeners, Omar Muhammad is a historian, and recently he was the anonymous blogger of the Mosul Eye, which informed the world about living under the Islamic State, along with the atrocities that the group had committed. Personally, as a researcher, I followed the Mosul Eye pretty religiously during everything. And still, they have great content, so definitely check it out. And he is also the host of Mosul and the Islamic State. And then Dr. Hororo Ingram is a senior research fellow at the Program on Extremism at George Washington University. He's also one of the authors of the ISIS Reader, Milestone Texts of the Islamic State, which personally I've got a copy right here, and I use it a lot for research and just also reading because it's highly important to the topic and the field. And he also is the writer and co-host of the Mosul and Islamic State podcast. So we've got the two important men of this podcast on the show. Why don't we start out talking about where this idea came from? Why did you decide to do this podcast, and some of the background?
I think I am the one who should start here. Thank you again for hosting us, Chelsea. It is, in fact, it's been almost over a year now when I sent a text message to the director of Program on Extremism, Lorenzo. It's after I have been reading lots of research papers about what happened in Mosul. For someone who have already not only lived what happened in Mosul, but documented that. And then I saw the difference between what really happened, the narrative of what happened, and the way the world understood what happened in Mosul. And then I asked him, like, can we do a podcast about this? And then it was so quick that he told me, give me a few minutes. And then after those few minutes, we started the conversation, Hororo and myself. Yes, it's over a year now. The first question that came to mind and that was put on the table was, should we really focus on the major events? And then my answer was simple. As a historian, I feel that history is not made up of the major events, rather the small details. And with these small details, we can only understand what happened. Beside that, there's something very important is to bring the people who experienced what happened in Mosul to tell their story on a global platform. And that was how everything started developing. It all started with the questions, hundreds of hours of discussions between Hororo, myself, And then everything started. It's a very long, tiring process. But the idea was actually, it's very simple, but at the same time, very complicated, is how to make sense in a on a global platform. How do you help the people to make sense of events that happened in a very local context? And I think that Haroro can explain more from this point, because he was the one who raised all the questions.
Yeah, thanks, Omar. The only thing that I'll add is that, you know, before even the idea of a podcast emerged, Omar and I had spent months talking. I mean, from about April or May of 2020, we were speaking most days of the week about our research, but also just generally about, I guess, our experiences. And throughout these conversations, these shared kind of concerns emerged about where the field was heading, where research was going, some of the policy decisions that had been made, but also about media reporting, the way that the media was covering these issues and these communities, and I guess ISIS and violent extremism more broadly. And ultimately, all of these concerns that we had kind of came back to this one root issue, which was the need to centralize local stories. And more than that, to focus in on the human aspect of those stories. So when the idea of the podcast kind of turned into reality, and that's entirely thanks to Omar and Lorenzo, the key was to find a way to tell the story of Mosul that was going to resonate with people, that was going to connect our listeners with those local and human perspectives. And I really appreciate the chance that I was given to write for this project. And this was kind of my first chance to do this type of storytelling, at least in a public sense. I have worked behind the scenes and this kind of thing before, mostly in radio, kind of ghostwriting. But ever since I started at the program, Seamus in particular had been encouraging me to kind of do more of this type of writing. And so I really appreciated that opportunity. And for me, it was obvious that to tell this story, we had to find a vehicle, and that had to be Omar. Now, Omar wasn't always comfortable with that. And Omar is the kind of person that is always looking to elevate other people. And so throughout this process, throughout production, he was bringing in all of these different interviews and perspectives and elevating those stories and trying to push those people to the fore. And that's very, very typical of him. But Omar was always going to be a very important way to move the story forward. Omar was going to be a really important vehicle for bringing these different threads. And there's about a dozen different threads that we wanted to bring together to tell this story. And Omar was going to be a really important part of doing that. His story, his extraordinary story, was going to need to be central to that. Look, the thing is this, is that Mosul can seem a very, very long way away. It can seem very, very abstract. And sadly, I think for most people, it's become intimately tied to ISIS. And just the experiences of those people, it's very hard, I think, for a general audience to even be able to comprehend what happened, the violence and the tragedies that the people of Mosul had to face. And, you know, our listeners should be thankful that most of them will never have to face such extremes. But there is a lot that is universal to this story. It's in those broad human experiences. You know, it's in those experiences of loss and tragedy and despair, but also resilience and hope in the face of all those things. It's in other themes, like the importance of family, the role of politics, good and evil. So these were the universal ideas that we wanted to kind of highlight throughout this story. And so basically, we tried to create a story that gave the audience every opportunity and a range of different reasons to connect with it.
And I think as a listener myself of the show, you've done a fantastic job in bringing all of these issues and desires to make the show both personal, telling the stories of people that survived this horror is the best way of putting it. You've really done that. You've told this story. You've also interjected the main points that have happened through this story, the history of it. But there's that really personal touch. And for Omar, I mean, you speak about things that are so personal, experiences that are very, very private. And I want to hear from you how that was for you, because many of us that have either experienced trauma or know how it affects people, it's sometimes really hard to talk about these things and bring them up again, because it puts you back in that time. And so as a listener and as someone that's followed your work and your heroic work through the Islamic State when it was in Mosul, you know, I thank you for that, because as Horora mentioned, you really are a hero. I guess that's the best way of putting it, at least in my mind. But yeah, I wanted to hear from you, Omar, about doing this podcast, because it is very personal.
Yes, in fact, I have discussed with Hororo things I have never discussed after what happened, and because he was raising questions that he was trying to help me to tell the story in a way that makes sense, to become a meaningful story. Because for me as a historian, I remember a quote I always use when I start any conversation about a history, the history of my own city, which is from a book called The Shattered Lullabies. It says, like, how does a historian write about violence against the history of his own city? How can he make sense of violent acts for himself and the readers? Without compromising, and this is what was my big concern, without compromising its sheer excess and its meaningful defying core. How can he remain a scholarly observer when the country of his birth is engulfed by terror? Whenever I get a question from Hororo, what happened here? What happened on this day? How did it happen? How did Daesh attack this site? How all of this happened? I always try to take a step back, because talking about my own experience, talking about my city, is not an easy thing to do. And there is something in what Hororo mentioned. Probably people would think that what happened in Mosul is a very local thing that happens only in the city of Mosul, because of the certain context of the city of Mosul. But if people listen to the podcast, they will realize, and I think many of them have already done this, that you realize that there is a universal commonality between what happened in Mosul and almost everywhere in the world. It's about the people and what they felt in the first moment when their life has changed, or the moment they have felt the change itself. All of these things are horrifying, and they are deep in its meaning, because it only makes sense when you speak to those people. And then the idea also developed because there were many things, like hundreds of hours of interviews with people from Mosul, from other parts of the world, people from different communities in the city of Mosul. And then I was listening to them. I was living there. and I was experiencing almost the same thing. But I realized also that each one of us would have a different story. And all of this started to be honest, I mean, it started horrifying me. It added more fear to my already fear that I have had with me since the beginning. But then it started becoming something more powerful, that finally this narrative of the history of Mosul, of what happened in Mosul, is being told by its own people on a global platform. And it's apart from the story itself, Chelsea, it's also the sense of working as a team. I mean, the way Haroro was posing the questions, I couldn't get the same questions, for example, from other people. But because we developed during very long hours of discussions, and you have already mentioned that we are completely in two different time zones. Like we are almost like 2 days, one day, like we have 1 day difference in time zone. It's always the night where Haroro is, and it's always the morning where I am. And then put in mind also that our mood is different, because when we are in the night, it's different from when we are in the morning. Yet for months after months, the only question was, what happened in Mosul? And we keep repeating the same question: what happened in Mosul? How did it happen? When it happened? Why did it happen? And all of these questions revealed, like, I think Haroro will be better to speak about this, but they revealed very small details that no one could ever know about them, only from those people who lived through the horrors of Mosul. And yes, there are personal stories, and I hesitated also to put many other personal stories. There are certain moments that we can never share them with anyone. And part of protecting those moments, it's not for the sake of privacy. No, it's for the sake of protecting that moment, that no one should ever touch this moment that we felt. But you need to get the help of someone who knows how to ask the questions. And I mean, to me, as also again, I study history, and to me, it's not the one who answers is the person who makes the argument. It's actually is the one who knows how to ask the questions, because once you know how to ask them, you will really get the story. And this is what was happening, is these conversations, they revealed the horrors, but also there is something very important. They revealed the resilience of the people of Mosul that I myself couldn't easily see it when I was there. But then I started observing all of these stories, like a young female, she's I think she was 16 at that time. She decided to open a school. And I don't want to burn the final episode, but I will tell this story, because she decided to open a school under the rule of Daesh. She opened the school secretly. She defied the education system of Daesh, and she started teaching kids from her own neighborhood. Who could have done this? How could she have this bravery and courage? She is the hero, not me, because she managed to find a way of creativity to peacefully resist Daesh. This what actually changed and is trying to change the narrative about what happened in Mosul. We have to listen to those people. This 16-year-old female, the musician who Amin Muqtad, who while Mosul was falling down, he just refused to leave his cello. He just refused to leave his music. He decided to accept whatever cost. But he said, I will play music. And he would go to his rooftop and play music. There are many other stories in the podcast. You would hear this kind of bravery. It's unique. But it's also important to say that it's a universal value. And it's one of the most common things between humans.
For me, listening to the show, I almost see it as a way of giving back those who experienced ISIS, their voice. And it's almost the news and media loves to portray people as victims. But as you said, Omar, you were not victims. You took your voice back and your power back, and you did whatever you could during that time. And I see this show almost honoring that and honoring the individuals who really are, like you said, they're all heroes. Hororo, I will hand it over to you because I'm sure you have some insight that you'd like to add as well.
You're right, Chelsea. That was a really important part of our intent with the podcast. And I guess along the way, we wanted to tell those stories that hadn't been told before. There are a lot of myths about ISIS, about the capture of Mosul, and about the people of Mosul that we needed to address. At the top of that list is this idea that Maslawis just let ISIS walk in. And worse than that, that they encouraged or even facilitated the capture of the city. And we spend basically the whole podcast addressing that idea, addressing that myth, not in some black and white way, but we approach it for what it is, which is a troubling, difficult, complex subject. But what I think becomes really clear is that the people of Mosul were put in a near impossible situation. Of course, people did the wrong thing. Of course, there were people that, yes, did support Daesh, did support ISIS. But for the vast majority of Maslawis, they just wanted to survive. And then, of course, there were those that engaged in acts of resistance, active and kind of passive, that are inspiring, they're courageous beyond belief, and they need to be remembered. So yeah, a big part of trying to give Maslawis their history back is to ensure that locals themselves, that Maslawis, are telling their own stories, their own perspectives. So a really big part of this was, yes, giving Maslawis their history back and not letting Daesh on the one hand, but also on the other hand, politicians and academics sitting thousands of kilometers away, or some shoddy journalists, giving them the lead in how that history will be remembered. And in our own small way, that's what we want to do with this podcast. The other aspect here is that it's more about that process of putting the podcast together, that giving people a chance to talk who've never spoken about this stuff before, about their experiences before. It can be quite cathartic for them. Now, I've worked in conflict zones for most of my career, and the traumas that are experienced by people there, they are deep, they are kind of intergenerational, and they profoundly impact not just the individual, but collectively as well, from the family unit to the broader community and beyond. Giving people a chance to talk, sometimes for the first time, especially with people that they can trust, it's cathartic, or it can be cathartic for them, but it also changes the way that they interact with their own experiences and those traumatic experiences. And that was really important as well. So having people say, hey, I've never talked about this before, or no one's asked that before, and then talking through it, and over time discussing all the interrelated issues, it it changes that relationship with those experiences. And I think that that was an important part of this as well. It's almost impossible to fathom what these people have been through. The violence, the genocide, and yet through all of that, people resisted. And bringing those stories forward, as we do in the last episode, in episode 4, was a really central part of re-engaging with that history and giving people an opportunity to re-engage with their experiences. I've spent a lot of time in these communities in the Middle East and in Asia, and I can assure you there is always a resistance. There are always people willing to push back, but we don't hear their stories very often because they're in the underground. They tend to work in secret. They're working in difficult, unstable, violent, dangerous parts of the world that are hard to access. The other sad part of this is that those people don't tend to survive very long. So it was essential for us to tell those stories, ensure that they are central in the final episode. And the really inspirational part of the Mosulli resistance to Daesh is that those same people are now central to the rebuilding and rehabilitation of the city.
And on that note, why don't you take us through how the episodes are structured a bit, just for those that may not have listened to it and are on the fence? You know, I highly recommend listening to it because it's done so well. And my other personal question is, you had all of these interviews, you had so much history and so many personal accounts. How did you even wrap your mind around it to be able to create what you have created, which is amazing, but it seems like there's so much, and how do you choose almost?
Yeah, well, it was an immense challenge. I mean, it was an immense challenge for me, you know. I'm not the smartest guy getting around, I guess, so I rely on long hours and a lot of planning to get through. And of course, I was very fortunate to be working with such a great team, and Omar and Andrew were brilliant. From the very beginning, we had our roles, and we focused on chipping away at what was a very large and kind of complex task. I mean, for some context, just in terms of the audio that we had collected throughout this effort, there were hundreds of hours of interview content. Then on top of that, there was the historical content. So these are news reports, maybe speeches by politicians, some raw content in addition to all of that. And then, of course, there was the original content from the Islamic State. So their propaganda speeches, videos. And we drew a lot on those primary source materials as well. And I really need to take this chance to say that Andrew Mines is just exceptionally talented. He worked insane hours on the audio editing, but he literally covered everything else as well. So from the admin side of things, the promotions, the archiving of all this material, and he did that so that, you know, Omar can focus on the interviews and the content and the hosting, and I could focus on the writing and production. So anyway, long story short, the audio alone was immense. Andrew had worked out that there was some minuscule percent of what we collected and edited that ultimately appears in the podcast. Now, on top of all of that, there is also the research that underpins everything. And so that was another layer. Now, Omar is second to none on this topic. His understanding of Mosul, of Mosul's history, of Daesh in Mosul, his Maslawi networks, all of that was, of course, a crucial component to the story. Now, for me, I had just finished writing the ISIS reader. And in fact, it was about the time that the reader was released, maybe a few months later, that Omar and I had really started talking regularly. So those key primary source materials were kind of fresh in my mind as we were having those discussions and then going into planning. I had also just finished writing The Long Jihad, which is an analysis of the Islamic State's insurgency theory and practice, focusing in particular on its capture of Mosul. And that research paper really informed a lot of these episodes from the ISIS perspective. So structurally across the podcast four episodes, the focus was on providing the appropriate context for Mosul and its people and understanding ISIS. But we had to ensure that we used kind of Omar's life to move the story along, basically from the 1980s, which is where we start in episode one, through to the present, where we end with episode four. The narrative dynamic, I guess, kind of had in mind was this kind of porpoising thing where, you know, you take the audience up to 30,000 feet, provide a view of the broad history, of the strategic dynamics, and then we dive down to the streets of Mosul and we get the perspectives of people who were there, eyewitness accounts from average citizens, from students, from politicians, from veterans. And then we go back up to that 30,000 foot view and have a look at that history again, those broad strategic dynamics. And then we take that dive, this time into, say, the inner sanctums of the Islamic State group. Their thinking, the kind of ideas that they were throwing around, how they shaped practice. And then, of course, go back up again. So that was the kind of dynamic. And so you see that with episode one, where we're looking at, for example, these decades of trauma because of war and sanctions, you know, these broad historical dynamics. But then we dive into Omar's basement when he's 4 years old. And then we go back up again to look at the impact of the sanctions and the rationale behind those sanctions. And then we dive back in to the impact that that had on the local population, you know, and we keep moving forward with that kind of dynamic. And then that then takes us to the Gulf War, and we look at some of the policies of the Gulf War, some of the strategies, the military strategies that were used. And then we dive into, well, how did ISIS try to deal with that? What operational ideas were they coming up with to try to be more successful in that context? And so throughout, we're going to that 30,000 foot view and then back down to the street, 30,000 foot view and then into the inner sanctums of ISIS. Now, you can go into a project like this with a general idea, well, even a pretty strong idea of how you want that central story to go, but ultimately the content dictates those little pathways that you'll go down along the way. And the interviews that we did took us in directions and ways that we were just not expecting. But that's part of the process. And I guess my last point is that the medium matters. And this is a podcast. This is about sound. So getting those layers right and the timing right, again, Andrew is brilliant. Omar and I had ideas about how we want to do this, but that's all on paper. It takes someone like Andrew to actually turn that into those ideas into reality. So what music should be played and when? What background sounds should we have? When should it just be silence and it's just the testimony? And so for us, we wanted to go light with a lot of the background sounds and music and all that kind of thing. You know, my sense has always been, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and whenever I'm listening to a podcast and there's a lot of padding in there, a lot of dramatic music and sound effects and dramatic speeches and all this kind of thing, we just felt like we didn't need any of that. If the story and if these people's experiences, if that's not enough for the listener, that's no problem. then this probably isn't for you. But we wanted to approach this in the way that we were comfortable with and the way that we would be happy with kind of presenting. Omar, is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to add that, you know, that I grew up in a house during very difficult times in Mosul. I mean, I was born during the war and went through the war, and my family's history goes back to also my grandfather was sentenced to death for being in the opposition, and many other things, which actually it's probably a very strange or weird connection, but the way my family and many other mostly families used to prepare the food, because of the lack of the food and you don't easily get the food, most of the food we eat actually requires time to process. So it takes very long time to be ready. That, for example, my grandmother used to bring the food prepared because she knows we might actually have like kind of like a problem that we will not have access to food anymore. So they prepare themselves always for the worst to come. But from that, I learned something, is that you can never understand anything if you don't give it the due process, the time that it requires. And that's why, as Haroro said, we really had hundreds of hours in stories. I mean, people were telling many things, and things as also, again, as Haroro said, things will never be published. But with that amount of information, it was also an ethical responsibility, Chelsea. How can we easily use almost everything was said to us without going back? And then the process start. I go back to my archives, compare what I have heard in the interview with the events I've documented, and then go back and I ask Haroro, and then check for the exact date of the event that did happen at that time, or was there any kind of like, probably sometimes people would speak as a reflection and they think it's the reality because of the trauma they might have went through. So all of this was going through very complicated and long process. It's not something like one episode might take over 5 months to just prepare and finalize the text that we would use, because you cannot put everything without researching. So it's also an experience we enjoyed, I think, as a team, and also being given the freedom from the program on extremism. We were given the freedom to do the podcast, and without any kind of intervention, they said, like, this is your podcast, go and do it. And then we started researching deep research, like asking the question, the same question we would ask it on different occasions many times, because we want to know, does this actually represent the truth? Is it real? Did it happen? After all, we would never put something on air without making sure that this is credible. And this is something very difficult, Chelsea, to do. It's not easy, given that the events happened or took place 7 years ago. And that's why, in my opinion, it's also important to elaborate here, that we decided we are not going to only put the voice of the Mosulis themselves. We want to hear not only, or to know not only how the people of Mosul, my people, have lived or saw this, but we also wanted to know how the outside world saw the same exact events. Therefore, we will have two different perspectives of the same event in order to make sense that this is not a local event. It is part of the global events that's happening around the world. It's a way of telling the people of Mosul, you are not alone, even after all of this, these horrors you have went through, but you are not alone. You have been observed. People were trying to study what happened to you. People were trying to understand what was happening to you. They also had their own views. It's to make sense of extremely local events to a global audience. And this is, in my opinion, has helped a lot in telling the story of Mosul through this podcast in a very, I think it's not right to praise our own podcast, but I am speaking as a historian, as if I am just observing this podcast, because when I listen to it, I feel myself, I'm listening to something for the first time. It was put in a very professional way that I remember many times. Hararo would say, like, we are not going to use this, whether you accept or not. This is not completely fit to the truth. It's not actually a part of the truth. We cannot prove this, even if it has lines that actually might prove it as a fact in the future. But we weren't able to verify it. Therefore, we just keep it away. Or there were other things that was also important. We treated the interviewees not as subjects or storytellers. No, that's why when I was speaking to them, and whenever I mention something to them or they try to answer something, I remind them that or give them an indication that we were in this time together. So I share with them personal feelings so that we'd know that I sympathize with them, and they know that this is not a storytelling. It is rather, I mean, to me, it was a therapy, and to them as well. That's why not all their stories were put, but only part of it. They realize at the end that, oh my God, did I tell all of these things? I've never told them before. I've never thought that I would be able to tell these stories before. And then we decide we are not going to take this. It's they were, you know yourself when you are telling something and you realize at the end, this is not something to be published. This is something I was telling you from a person to another. That's why we also really cared a lot, and we're very careful to respect the human side of the story. It is not a storytelling. It is not like a media content. No, it is something about a city that was heavily damaged, devastated by wars. It has to get the chance to tell what happened through the voices of its own people.
One of the things that when I listen to it and also hearing your thoughts that you put into it, all of the effort and time, it is a podcast and it is a show that records this. But I mean, coming from a historical background, Omar, I see it almost as a testament of this moment in history and making it, putting it out there for everyone in the future. And as you said, it's about Mosul, but it also can be transferred to so many other experiences that people go through in conflict across the world. And I want to touch on that a little bit. I know we did before actually recording, but we have all these conflicts. Of course, recently, Afghanistan has been talked about so much. So in your opinions, even though this show is about Mosul, how do we see it reflected in the greater world?
Let's use what the current events of Kabul, Chelsea. I mean, the moment Kabul fell, and I started reading the reports and watching the reports from Afghan inside Kabul and all of these things, while we are still working on the podcast and events happened in Mosul, I immediately called Hararo, what's happening? I mean, this is this is something I read now that almost exactly the same happened 7 years ago when Mosul fell. The similarities are horrifying, and it tells you that the human cost, no matter where it happens, it is always the same, because there these kind of like feelings. I started reading, for example, someone is writing about, I think it's an Afghan scholar. She was writing about that, saying that hope is a moral and intellectual obligation. We have to keep this hope because we have to care about the next generation. We shouldn't give up. And hope is not the false optimism. No, it's the intellectual product that you make. And then I said, like, I've read this 7 years ago. I read another one saying, like, I am from Afghanistan. I am from Kabul. I am Afghan, and I am from the occupied Kabul. I said, I wrote this 7 years ago. I am Mosuli. I am from the occupied Mosul. And then all of these similarities started reflecting again and again, which was very difficult for me, because, I mean, imagine living the same events again after 7 years, after trying to heal from the trauma, happening again and again. And I am sure that same horrors and the similarities have happened in other parts of the world. Haroro with Taylor wrote about the Philippines, the same in Marawi. We have other elements in other parts of the world. And that's why we decided we are going to add special content, a special part of the podcast dedicated only to Kabul and what happened to Kabul. We have already started interviewing Afghan people. Some of them are still in Kabul. Others have left. Others are waiting for their fate. Others who are telling me that I have lost everything that I've built in the last 20 years, which is something like the same kind of like sentence that I've heard from Mosulis who were telling me, like, everything I hoped for is gone. It's vanished before my eyes. That's the horrifying part, Chelsea, is that the world couldn't prevent the same thing from happening again. They couldn't prevent it. And that the people, those ordinary people who wants to live their life, who wants to continue their life, and they are, by the way, they are true believers in peace, democracy, and future. Those are the true believers in the real values of human lives. But what happened to them? And as we said in our podcast, like, what do they get in return? They get betrayed. And you can, I'm pretty sure you can see this yourself. You can see what happened to those people in Afghanistan. One of the Afghan scholars told me, those are literally people who have nothing to do with the history of Taliban or the history of Afghanistan under Taliban. They are completely a new generation who saw completely different life and a better life. And everything is vanished now for them. It's exactly the same with the lost opportunities. To the extent that I told Harora and Andrew, like, guys, look, we don't have to do another podcast. Let's just change it from Mosul and the Islamic State to Kabul and Taliban. And the story is the same.
Hororo, is there anything you'd like to add to that? And I completely agree with what you said, Omar, just from watching everything that's unfolded in the last, what has it been, month and a half or so. And it's terrifying how it's so familiar from what we've seen in the past with other conflicts, but I'm going to hand over the floor to Hororo now.
Well, we're going to address a lot of these issues, you know, as best as we can in this upcoming special episode. And we have interviews with subject matter experts, with veterans, with politicians, but most importantly, Afghans are central to how we approach this story. And I guess I just want to say that it is impossible to comprehend the sense of loss that people have. Now, the true believers in democracy and freedom in Afghanistan have been devastated. And when I say that those true believers, that's not the politicians. They ran. It's not the NGOs who made a career and a few dollars. They're gone too. It is those Afghans who spent, 20 years trying to be educated, engaging in civil society, raising their heads up despite the risks in an effort to pursue something better for themselves, but certainly for the future. And who invested and risked the most? It was women. I mean, of course it was women, and it always is. And who has this withdrawal devastated the most? Well, it's Afghan women. I mean, the sense of betrayal and despair, you'll hear it. It's visceral and it's profound. And how have many Afghan women responded? By resisting. They've gone to the streets and they've protested. And again, it's a bit of a theme, I guess, in our discussion today, but most people listening to this right now are not capable of understanding the courage it takes to do that, to face this tyrannical jihadist regime who have demonstrated that they have no issues with torturing, mutilating, and killing women. And in this upcoming episode, Afghan women, including protesters, are really central to this story. Now, if this sense of betrayal wasn't enough, and this is something that I think is going to emerge from these discussions, that betrayal, that feeling of betrayal, it doesn't come from nothing. Afghans have expressed this sense of betrayal because they are holding us here in the West to the standard that we set, the bar that our rhetoric, our promises of democracy, freedom, and equality, the bar that we set and then walked away. Now, what makes this so much worse is that, as if that injury is not enough, they now need to bear the insult of hearing this Taliban whitewashing by Western politicians, the media, and academics. And so I think that these are some of the key themes that really come out in this special episode. And I hope that, that perhaps people take a little bit of time to listen and to hear what Afghans have to say.
I, for one, am looking forward to that, because as everything you said rings very true to me as well. I know, Omar, you have a time constraint. So my last question, going back to the Mosul and Islamic State podcast, is after going through this huge adventure, huge testimonies, almost therapy as well, what is it that you would hope listeners gain from listening to this show? And I'll hand it over to you, Omar. And if you need to drop off the call before we end recording, that is fine too. But I'll hand it over to you, Omar, first.
Yeah, I think it's in a very short sentence, I would say that, which is something that we made sure to put in the podcast, is always go back to the start. Whenever you finish the podcast, always go back. You might have missed something, because this is the way we put the podcast, Chelsea, is you cannot understand the fourth episode without listening first to the first episode, and then you go through the other episode. But also, you cannot understand the first one without going to the final one. So it's kind of like a circle of knowledge that you need to keep going through. And it's very important to not judge the people of Mosul before you listen to the podcast. Listen to the podcast and then judge what happened in Mosul. I'm sorry, but I will have to leave now.
No, thank you so much for coming on the show. And Hororo, I'll pass it on to you.
Thanks, Chelsea. Of course, I agree 100% with Omar. We designed this series so that listeners can go back and pick up different threads and kind of follow them through the episodes. So, you know, you can listen to this history and then you can listen to it again, kind of for the first time. And maybe some of our listeners can encourage others to have a listen to the podcast as well. You know, Omar, Andrew, and I, we didn't really go into this with some high and mighty ideals. You know, it was pretty simple. We just want to tell these stories, get these stories out there, and do it as best we can. And again, it's the support that you receive from the program and all of our colleagues there has been fantastic. And that is always going to be the central thing for us, was just getting these stories out there. Ultimately, we just appreciate that people have shown an interest in the podcast. And so, yeah, to our listeners, we appreciate your time. And please keep an eye out for episode 4, which will be out soon, and some bonus content in the coming weeks.
Well, fantastic. I think that's a great way to end the show. And of course, Omar had to go, but Hororo, thank you for coming on the show as well. And yeah, to our listeners, I definitely recommend the podcast, spreading the podcast love, as I mentioned at the starting of this show. But thank you so much for sharing this experience and the whole process with us today.
Hey, thanks, Josie. We really appreciate, having the opportunity to talk with you, but also thank you for your contribution to Mosul's Islamic State. You know, it was a really important contribution and it was really greatly appreciated. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. It was an honor to be a part of it. So yes.